Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture, and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
It's Friday, so thanks for heading into the weekend with us. And because it's Friday the 13th in October, congratulations to all the goth couples who are undoubtedly getting married in Las Vegas today. Today on CityCast Las Vegas, however, I am here with producer Layla Mohammed and contributor Andrew Crawley from TheList.Vegas, and we're going to talk about things in the news. A possible solution to that F1 traffic for Strip employees, CCSD's version of school choice, and baby tortoises. Oh yeah, baby tortoises. It's Friday, October 13th. I'm David Figler, and here's what Las Vegas is talking about. Andrew, Layla, welcome to the Friday News Roundup.
Hey, hey.
Good morning.
Good morning, good morning. All eyes are on this F1. I don't want to call it a fiasco because it's probably going to come off as a great race, but boy, the buildup has lasted forever and caused so much, I don't know, distress and turmoil amongst the populace.
Mm-hmm. A little angst.
Andrew Crawley. I mean, one of the big issues of many that was popping up was how do the people who work on the Strip get to their jobs? So apparently the Las Vegas Convention and Visitors Authority finally came up with a workaround. What was that?
Yeah. So this week they put out a $300,000 bid to solve this Gordian knot of how to get about 10,000 Strip employees to work during the F1 race, which, is happening November 16th through the 18th. And so, yeah, this is kind of a big puzzle to solve because you're going to need, 10,000 workers to get to the Strip during, race week, which, in that footprint of the actual race, there's about like 23,000 hotel rooms. And mm-hmm. so they have, a plan in place, and I'm no traffic engineer, but it sounds like a sort of Herculean engineering issue. So what they're going to do is they're going to open up about 4,300 parking spaces at the convention center and take the monorail as well. And so the idea is that these 10,000 employees are going to show up at the Las Vegas Convention Center and, use those parking spots, use the monorail to get to the east side of the Strip. And they're also going to have a shuttle bus system. They're going to have 10 satellite parking spots, parking areas kind of situated in the racetrack environs to get these folks to work. And I'm going to be watching this particular sub race with much interest to see if they could actually accommodate these workers this late in the game. I'm really surprised they're actually trying to crack this nut right now.
Well, I think that it just got to a fever pitch, and not to say that those workers aren't being inconvenienced by all the construction that's happening right now and the barriers to even get to work at this moment, let alone during mm-hmm. race times. So it's a glorified park and ride. I don't know. On a scale of 1 to 10, Layla, what does this plan look like to you if you had to rate it?
I'd probably, because it's so late in the game, I'd probably give it no higher than a 5 because they couldn't have thought it out that well. Or it must have been like a last minute, like, well, we need something for all of these workers, so we'll just throw this together. And it's hard for workers to get on the Strip with the normal construction barriers. So this is bound to be some sort of a fiasco.
What's funny to me, Andrew, is, all of a sudden now the monorail, maybe for the first time in history, has become relevant as it relates to the local populace.
I know.
Right? I guess, is this just the best of a bad situation?
Yeah, if I had to give it a grade, I like to say I'd give it a PN for possible nightmare. I'm no traffic engineer. I'm not even a regular engineer. But I mean, if you do the math, you know, 10,000 strip workers, 4,300 parking spots at the convention center, you know, most people, you know, are very resistant to the idea. So if you say, oh, well, maybe some of them can carpool and things like that. But if you take in the sort of resident reluctance to do things like car share and carpool, that itself is going to be a challenge. So I wonder about that. I think using the monorail is a you know, pretty reasonable idea because that can distribute the people along the east side of the strip. I wonder how they're going to get to, you know, the west side. I think there's just going to be, you know, a lot of walking, or maybe the shuttle system will come into play somehow where they can, you know, ferry them, you know, around somehow. But I find the whole thing kind of broadly, you know, emblematic of how we value our workers here in Las Vegas and how we value labor, right? Oof. Because the fact that we're talking about how are we going to actually take care of the workers who are supposed to be showcasing Las Vegas hospitality, you know, the Las Vegas Strip, Las Vegas as a tourist destination during this very high profile spectacle. And we're talking about them at, you know, in the sort of, you know, the fourth quarter of the game. So I just find that kind of interesting, metaphorical, a little sad. It also kind of resonates that the culinary is going to start picketing, or has started picketing, on the Strip to bring attention to their long lapsed contract with, you know, MGM and Caesars. So I think there's this weird cosmic coincidence going on that says a lot about, you know, how we treat our hospitality workers.
Yeah, both of you have called this an afterthought, and the LVCVA only announced this solution on Tuesday after I think it just became unavoidable that they had to come up with something. Is this really more of a sign of, you know, the powers of Strip City, LVCVA, and the Stadium Authority, and the Resort Association versus citizens and workers? I mean, is this going to be a never-ending battle? Is F1 just one flashpoint? What do you think?
I think that's a great way of putting it. And I think this sort of tension between, you know, essentially labor and capital is another sort of chorus in the song, another refrain. And yeah, it's unfortunate that the workers are the last thing we think about. And, you know, and F1 is, you know, it's not just a race. I think, you know, if you sort of, you know, sort of zoom out, that, you know, this is owned by this gigantic media conglomerate, Liberty Media. So I think the sort of powers at play here are, truly sort of imbalanced. And I've been dipping into the socials in some of the conversations about F1 on, you know, on Reddit, on Facebook, on X. And there seems to be this feeling among Las Vegas residents that we're sort of hostage to these gigantic, you know, mega corporate spectacles, and that, you know, things like, you know, human accommodations in terms of, you know, transportation or livability are an afterthought. I've heard some comments about the Sphere, about actually getting in and out, you know, and how they do, you know, crowd ingress and egress is, again, you know, to restate the theme, kind of an afterthought. So I think it's unfortunate that we're not, you know, accommodating the human element in a lot of these projects.
Yeah, I think this is, I mean, like you said, we're kind of being held hostage. F1 is not just this year. They signed a contract for the next 10 years.
Wow.
So this is going to be an ongoing issue if they can't figure it out this year. The same question and the same issues are just going to come up next year of how do we navigate these road closures and constructions. And I think, to your point, Andrew, Las Vegas has not been great at maybe crowd management or managing these huge events and spectacles that they're putting up. Yeah, I did hear that the Sphere's parking lots are not great, similarly to the Allegiant's parking structure and lack thereof. So I think it'll be interesting to see what the Super Bowl looks like come February.
Oy.
And if
yeah.
we're going to have the same issues there with whatever road closures we'll see and just the management of these huge events.
Yeah, I mean, Las Vegas elevates cluster effery to an art form. You know, on the other...
It's all part of the meta spectacle, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, and I just want to end on this point is that, you know, the head of the Las Vegas Convention and Visitors Authority, Steve Hill, is like, okay, but it's going to bring $15 billion with a capital B into our economy over the next 5 months. And I just don't buy it, man. I think that's just a marketer doing marketing. I don't think any one of us is going to see a damn nickel of that.
Yeah.
And was it worth it?
Yeah, that's
was it worth
question.
It? Well, I mean, you know, Zoom Zoom and Super Bowl and everything else. Oh, Vegas. No one does it like we do it.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
All right, topic two. Magnet school applications are open for next year, 24-25. The Clark County School District is hosting what they're calling a school choice fair. Layla, that language intrigues me. Tell me what the Clark County School District's school choice fair is all about.
Yes, so the Clark County School District's School Choice Fair is this Saturday from 9 to noon at one of their magnet schools, LVA, Las Vegas Academy of the Arts. And they are doing that to let parents and students know all of their options for schools within the Clark County School District, including magnet schools, which are a part of the public school system, and all of their options and all of the kind of specializations that they offer and can get through magnet schools.
Well, what kind of specializations or magnets are we talking about that are inside the Clark County School District? I mean, I know there's a lot of them, but what are some of the bigger ones or the more well-known ones?
So the biggest ones are the technical academies, for example, Northwest Career and Technical Academies, Southwest, Southeast. Those are the biggest magnet schools in Vegas right now, but there's also some smaller ones, and all of them specialize in something, whether it's performing arts or STEM, science, technology, engineering, mathematics, leadership, international baccalaureate programs. So those are the array of specializations your children can utilize or get access to within the Clark County School District.
Now, what I found really super duper interesting is the Clark County School District is calling this a school choice fair. Of course, those words are somewhat a loaded term that has become like a banner for conservative and religious parent groups who want to get some state funding, some taxpayer money to help them pay for private schooling, which is overwhelmingly like over 90-something percent religious schools. So how do you think school choice in this context is different?
Yeah, I think it's different because they're emphasizing magnet schools, which are part of the public school system. They are free to attend. They do have enrollment criteria, so your student might need to meet GPA requirements, and they have a limited amount of seats. So if they have more applications than they do seats, then they go through a lottery system to kind of keep it fair. Magnet schools came to Clark County School District in the 90s to help diversify the Clark County School District and desegregate it. And so this is a public school system option for school choice. And I think that gets away from what Lombardo was most commonly talking about during his campaign with the opportunity scholarships, which mainly were to send students to private schools. And that number is 95% of kids who received opportunity scholarships used those for religious private schools. So I think that's where this is different. This is going into the public school system side of things.
Andrew, what's your takeaway from them using those words, school choice and their fair?
Yeah, I really found that kind of funny, and I did a double take. And like you said, yeah, it's definitely a loaded term, and it's pretty much become a byword for, you know, publicly funded religious education at the behest of angry conservative parents. So I kind of wondered whether the school district called this a school choice fair to maybe placate those parents or to placate the governor and maybe say, yeah, we're addressing this policy agenda of yours, because I think it would have been more technically correct if they just called it a magnet school, you know, educational fair kind of thing. So I thought that was an interesting choice of words. And I wonder if there are some sort of micro politics at work, on the DL.
I think their choice of language maybe is to like reclaim that term or something. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Because it's not just for magnet schools. The change of school assignment applications are also open. And that's for parents and families wanting to send their student to schools outside of their zoning area. So say I wanted to go to Green Valley High School when I lived in North Las Vegas, I can submit a change of school assignment, not necessarily for a magnet school or a magnet program, but just wanting to go to a school outside of my zone.
So very technically, you are making a choice, a school choice.
Yes,
I hear you.
And I would imagine on those applications, there have to be some sort of compelling reasons based on their standards. Guys, I just looked at it as a straight on clapback. Because part of the school choice lobby here is a straight up attack on the quality of education at the Clark County School District. Mm-hmm. If you listen to any of the testimony during that opportunity scholarship funding hearings, it was all like, you know, and I'm paraphrasing, Clark County School District sucks big time. Why shouldn't I as a parent have the freedom to choose my student getting a better education? They never mentioned the religious part of it, even though, like we were talking about, it's really just about religious education. But it's definitely a direct attack on the quality of education. They talk about the safety at the schools, et cetera. And I think that Clark County School District is firing back like, hey, you want to talk about choice? There are lots of choices that absolutely exist within the public funding realm of public schools. I do wonder what questions any family should bring to the Clark County School District administrators who are present at this school fair choice. I mean, what do you think they should be asking or talking about with the folks that are at the fair?
I think a great question would be how the teacher shortage affects these magnet programs and these magnet schools. Mm-hmm. Because they are still within the Clark County School District system. Is that teacher shortage affecting class size? Is it affecting the amount of resources that are going to these magnet schools that get higher funding to make sure that students have more resources? And a big draw for magnet programs and magnet schools and charter schools, but we're not really talking about that in this conversation, is class size and smaller class sizes and more resources going to your student. So I think that would be a great question to ask, since these magnet schools still operate within the Clark County School District system.
Hmm. Yeah, great questions.
I would also imagine, you know, the whatever the measure of success is, like what is the measure of success for my student here? How do other students who have graduated from these magnet programs, how are they faring in the world? What is their, you know, economic opportunity spectrum? Are they going to colleges? Are they doing well? Are they going to good colleges? I think these are all really good questions asked for of CCSD. And I think that CCSD being so under fire from so many different fronts doesn't get to brag about the successes. We just seem to linger, don't we, Andrew, in some of the bad stats.
Yeah, they should have called it the school clapback fair. I'm really liking this this thread that we're on for sure. And yeah, another thing I'd be curious about too, as a parent, if I had a kid in the school system, would be, you know, what are the sort of credentials of the teachers who are actually teaching these, you know, focused magnet programs? I often wonder, like, do they just do some sort of like light supplemental, you know, training to, you know, to credential somebody in an area of specialty? Or do these teachers actually go through, like, you know, a serious, meaningful, rigorous program to, you know, to really bring some expertise to these magnet experiences? And I just love the idea of magnet schools because it fundamentally recognizes that, you know, the traditional school system, you know, doesn't fit every learning style. And,
exactly.
You know, some students are suited for, you know, something more, you know, specialized, something maybe more vocationally oriented, something more artistic. So, I think it's a great development in terms of public education.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't really think it was ever fair to consider Clark County School District as a one-size-fits-all, take-it-or-leave-it sort of environment. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, having a fair like this definitely highlights, you know, a lot of that kind of diversity. Look, all three of us were educated in Clark County School District, as it turns out. Were any of you in magnet schools, or if you weren't, what would you have wanted to do as a student?
I didn't go to a magnet school. I did go to a charter school, and I had a lot of friends who went to magnet schools because our parents didn't want to keep us in the public school system. And I think something that parents need to be mindful of is that if students want to be involved in any extracurricular activities, then there's a little bit of a dance around that where you have to go to your zone school and you have to work that out, and you have to work out extra just like transportation and making sure your kid can get to their new magnet program or charter or whatever school, and then also attend clubs or sports at their zone school. So I think that was kind of a surprise when my parents were putting me through the charter system, and that dance was a little bit of a headache, but it is an option and it can work out if you have the resources. But also there are requirements to that. And if you change schools, you're put on a hold. So just really make sure that you look into all of that, because with school choice also comes a lot of other requirements and things that you have to follow for your student.
Yeah, not uncomplicated. Andrew, are you too old to have been in a magnet school? But if you had a choice, what would you have done?
Yes, I am of the BC era or the PM era, pre-magnet school. I went to Las Vegas High School before it became the Las Vegas Academy. But it's funny you ask that, because it was late in my high school career that I took a couple semesters of a journalism class that was taught by, you know, one of those Swiss Army knife teachers who does like some PE. He does some you know, arts classes, and then he subbed in for journalism. But I took a really rabid interest in journalism, and I remember wishing that there were more classes and we went more in depth and it was, you know, just a lot more to it. So I really feel, you know, if I could hop into a time machine, that would be awesome to, you know, to go to a, you know, maybe a journalism or writing focused a magnet program. So I sort of see their value in retrospect.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was in the beta magnet program over at Valley High School, which was the International Baccalaureate, which I'm very happy to see is still thriving over there. Mm-hmm. It was definitely an interesting experience, and one which was purely a choice that I made with my parents. And I think it absolutely paid off. It was a great education with some fantastic teachers. So
look at you now.
Parents, look at me now. I'm podcasting. Well, good luck to all the parents and students for 24-25. May you find the right path.
Yes, good luck.
Okay, topic three, and let's just go through this one quickly. I read a story in the Nevada Current by Jennifer Solis. It was riveting. I recommend everyone take a look. It's about these little baby tortoises, these juvenile tortoises, 51 of them, in fact, that are being released into a habitat in southern Nevada that they might not get killed in and that they might possibly thrive. The desert tortoise, which, you know, is really our mascot of all life in the valley, is in trouble in a lot of ways because the drought has not only impacted their habitat, but it has really kind of perked up the predators who wouldn't otherwise be feasting on them. So, you know, And I didn't even know this. I knew about ravens and I knew about coyotes, and it's never their first choice to go try to eat a tortoise. But when other food sources are drying up, they'll go there. But also badgers. I didn't even know we had stinking badgers down here. But badgers are eating the tortoises too. But of course, worse than any of the predators are us humans, who keep building and building and expanding and driving these tortoises closer and closer to their predators. So the story is really just about this Herculean effort. These tortoises are in between. They're not babies anymore per se, because their shells are a little harder, so they're a little safer, but they're not sexually active yet. So they're basically tweens.
They're tween tortoises.
Tween tortoises. And they're putting them in a place. I don't know. Do we need to be working more on those upstream issues than trying to just simply repopulate tortoises 51 at a time? Aren't these same problems just going to keep doing this kind of damage to our natural habitat?
Yeah, I think the theme of today's talk is afterthought. And, you know, the tortoises have been historically an afterthought in terms of development in Nevada, conservation in Nevada, and, you know, big scale industrial solar development is unstoppable. And the fact that it's relatively easy to get big projects sited on public land in Nevada, and I think that's the picture that I see here. The BLM is, you know, their job is to kind of accommodate everybody. And I think we see the legacy of that when you see these battles between conservation and renewable energies. Opponents that you would really hope not to see clashing, but that's kind of a recurring theme in contemporary times.
Definitely. I mean, we need to think about how we're affecting it on the front end so we don't have to try to make up for it years later in an effort that we don't know if it's going to work in the long run. We don't know if it's going to significantly increase the population that we've already decreased.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, I mean, and as cute as they are, they're also pretty resilient. And while they typically survive, and we haven't even mentioned climate change, I'm not going to go down that pathway, but it merits a mention. Their mortality rates recently, because of all this kind of factors happening, in one study, it's like up to 50%. It's just like not tenable. So, I mean, good luck to all you tween tortoises that have just been released into a new habitat, relocated. Yeah, burrow.
Yeah, they're getting kicked out of these, you know, of the house. And if I was one of these like tween tortoises, I'd be like, no, I don't want to be. I'm not ready to go see the real world. Let me stay in this posh quasi artificial habitat you got me in. So I'm kind of terrified on their behalf.
They're out there and they're being tracked. And I'm imagining that probably the researchers give them fun names. But why don't we do that game really quick for these 51 tween tortoises for funsies? What names do you want to give one of them?
My most Vegas-y one I could come up with was Turt Kerkorian.
Oh, that's a good one.
I was trying to go quintessentially Vegas.
Okay, well, you said, you know, putting them out in the real world, and that made me think, okay, they're a tween, they're about to become sexually active, they're going to be mingling with 50 other tortoises. I'm going to name it after Bryn, who was my favorite of the original Real World Las Vegas cast. She was single and ready to mingle. She became a go-go dancer for a minute. Knows how to party. I want my tween tortoise to be named Bryn.
Bryn.
Okay.
Bryn.
Wow, you really, really thought that out. That was quite an elaborate
setup. Yeah. Real world. Real world.
That's a good one.
Tortoise style.
I have one that mine is like kind of an association game. So when I think of tortoises, I think of Springs Preserve, because we went there so freaking much in elementary school for field trips, and that's where we saw the most desert animals. And across the street from Springs Preserve is Meadows Mall. So I'm going to name mine Meadow. For Meadows Mall. Okay. Yes.
Nice, and also after Tony Soprano's daughter, because that tortoise is going to be a badass.
Exactly. Yes, I love that.
Well, Layla, Andrew, another great Friday News Roundup. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks, David.
Thank you. Great being here.
At And that's all for today here on CityCast Las Vegas. Our lead producer is Sonia Cho Swanson. Our producer is Layla Muhammad. Our newsletter editor is Scott Dickensheets. And our host is David Figler. That's me. Music is by OG Moose, Epidemic Sound, and All the Kimonos. We record this show on the traditional homelands of the new movie, the Southern Paiute people. If you enjoyed the show, go tell a friend, rate the show, leave us a review, and subscribe to our morning newsletter. We'll be back Monday morning with more news from around the city. Till then, stay lucky.
How about Shell Dunn Adelson? No?
Ooh, that's a good one. You keep that, Andrew.